Tested is sponsored by Duke Health, home of the Pandemic Response Network, helping communities stay safe and connected during the COVID-19 pandemic by partnering with local school, business, and faith-based organizations to launch COVID-19 system support programs in their own communities. Learn more at pandemicresponsenetwork.org.
I'm Dave DeWitt. This is Tested from WUNC, a look at what the day's challenges tell us about where we are, what we believe, and who we want to be in North Carolina and the South. Today, departures. COVID-19 has taken the lives of more than 5,000 North Carolinians, and it's impacting the final days of countless more. The coronavirus has run rampant in nursing homes and residential care facilities, resulting in hundreds of outbreaks across the state and close to 25,000 confirmed cases. COVID-19 is a constant threat in these congregate living spaces as staff try to keep their residents as safe as possible. And through it all, those working in end-of-life care remain committed to supporting people as they pass on and those they leave behind.
So we have N95 masks. We have face shields, gloves, and gowns.
Tracy Strader is a hospice nurse and clinical care manager at the AthoraCare Collective in Greensboro. She's had to be flexible to work with the needs of residential facilities as well as clients. She screens herself for COVID symptoms daily and checks to see whether she'll even be allowed into a facility before heading over to see patients.
I keep my PPE in the back of my car. I have a clean side and a dirty side. I garb up. My facilities also have a screening tool that they're using. And so when I walk out and get to the front of the building, they have a doorbell. I ring the doorbell. There's an X for me to stand on. I wait there until they open the door and then complete their employee screening, sanitize my hands, and go in. There are some challenges when you're wearing a mask, especially with the population that I'm serving. They are mostly geriatric patients. There may be some that are hard of hearing or have dementia. And so that may be hard to have a conversation with a mask on. But we have found other ways, writing on a whiteboard, speaking loudly, maybe not, dependent on the patient. And so there are some challenges, but we work around those.
Strader's colleague, Risa Hanau, says hospice and palliative care workers have always had to work in unpredictable circumstances. And they've found new ways to support people who are dying, as well as those who love them, in ways that are flexible and comprehensive.
You know, we want to be involved as soon as possible so that we can provide counseling during an illness, not just after. Our hospice patients have social workers and chaplains and hospice aides and nurses and bereavement counselors. And so I think part of the hope is that while we are physically distanced, that we remain socially connected and draw upon the resources that are out there.
In the best of times, death can be a difficult conversation to have. And like almost every other aspect of our lives, the pandemic has made things worse. Lakeisha Butts says it's important to grapple with death together, since it's a main thing we all have in common. Lakeisha is an end-of-life doula in Durham. For her, that means providing both practical support and candid conversations about mortality, spirituality, and loss with those who are dying and their loved ones.
Death is something that is just horribly stigmatized. You know, whenever you sit down and you talk with your family members, or you're like, hey, you know, when I die, don't say that, you know, you're not going anywhere. You know, people don't like to talk about death at all. You know, although this is just the final transition to whatever you believe in, it's just still the final transition to something else.
Any other time, Butts would visit with a client in person to hold their hand and have contemplative discussions by their bedside. Meanwhile, she'd have emotional and practical discussions with loved ones as they prepare for their own new normal. But COVID makes that impossible, and Butts has had to adapt. She spoke with Tested producer Rebecca Martinez about how she's making it work with a client today.
We're doing things via telephone. So therefore, you know, I'm working collaborative with her medical team. So one of the facets of being an end-of-life doula is, you know, you can assist them with getting their advanced directives together if they haven't thought about it, making sure the POA, whoever's handling the power of attorney, they know what to do, being support to the family because the families just can't believe they're, you know, in the shock phase, or just being their unbiased ear as they're, you know, as the client is venting. And that's pretty much the capacity where I am right now with this particular client. It's just, you know, dealing with her on a spiritual level and just having her digress. Aside, also just reminding her, you know, death is imminent. You don't want to lie, you know, but just having you be coaxed just to be a little bit more, you know, calm through this, whatever she needs from me, I tell her I can do it within, within means.
So how do you feel about doing this distance and virtual work?
If you had asked me this question last year, I would have been extremely ecstatic to be able to work from home. However, right now, to me, is extremely limiting and extremely hindering because, you know, I'm talking to the client on the phone. I can't see how they're looking. They can be totally on the decline right now, or they can be telling me anything over the phone right now just to, you know, because they're in denial or whatever. But when you're actually seeing someone in person, you know, you can assess these things so much better. You know, you can see if there's any type of risk that's in their home right now, if they're a person who chooses to stay home versus go to a hospice, you know, seeing if there's anything for fall risk or if their house is safe or if they've just got too much clutter to fire, you're able to see those types of things in person. When you're doing these things virtually or you're doing them over the telephone, you don't see anything. So yeah, I don't like it at all. I really do miss being able to see people in person. You know, human interaction is extremely important to us. We heal better. Our bodies naturally respond better whenever we are together collaboratively. So yeah, I don't like it, but I'm trying to find ways to make it work.
Yeah, thanks. So I understand that COVID-19 has hit closer to home for you than just with your doula work.
Yes.
Can you tell me about how it's touched your family?
Well, unfortunately, we did recently lose a close family member to COVID. A lot of people, I would say in my peer group that I've talked to, they have lost or had someone affected by this in one shape, form, or fashion. Either they lost. I talked to a young lady this weekend and she stated, yeah, my aunt, she just passed away. You know, another person, they told me that their mother, and then, you know, that's a totally different situation with how the funeral processes are. You can't even grieve your family members the same exact way. You know, I know in the African-American community, you know, historically, whenever you pass away, it's still a celebration of life. You're able to celebrate that person. But right now, because of COVID and then the social limitations that we do have, you're not able to do that. You know, it's capped at the people who can actually attend to the funeral. And then there aren't any type of things that you can do to commemorate thereafter. You just like, okay, it's like you go into a meeting with the family and then you get in your cars and you just leave and go away. So it's hard. It's extremely hard, you know?
Yeah. You know, you're experiencing this pandemic just along with the rest of us. And you've got this training, you've got this experience and this perspective that helps you approach death in a way that's less reactive or less avoidant, you know, than perhaps the average person. Mm-hmm. And yet your family, the African American community, people of color are being disproportionately affected by this pandemic. How does this experience, like being in it, in this way, how does that feel different from perhaps the approach you had to death before the pandemic?
For me, it's that we have to take this serious, that we have to take life more seriously. Furthermore, we need to start planning our death, you know, not planning to get out there and die, but, you know, we need to start planning on getting our affairs in order. while we're still here, pre-death, like even now, I'm 42 years old. So now this has opened my eyes up to, oh, I need to make sure that my advance directive is in order. I need to make sure that my family knows, you know, where the bank, where the passwords are, you know, what bank accounts, what debts that I still have, you know, just making it a little bit more real. And me kind of like educating my family as well. I'm like, you know, because they don't want to hear about it when I'm telling my mom, like, well, Ma, you know, I have to gradually talk to her about it. You know, you just can't go full force in about, hey, Ma, you start planning your, you know, what's going to happen when you pass, you know. But that's how I see it now. It's like, it's imperative that we plan, because in reality right now, COVID 2020 has shown us that we're here right now. At 105, I may not be. You know, so we need to kind of be very proactive in our approach. Also, not taking on too much stress, although that's kind of like counterintuitive with the pandemic going on. But because of the fact that, you know, this is a very heightened spiritual, emotional time that we're in right now, just trying to like enjoy every single day. Don't put something off. Oh, I'm gonna do it when I get this. No, you need to do it today, because you don't know. You just don't know. Tomorrow you may be gone. So for me, I really did not live my life like that prior to the pandemic, but just trying to make sure that my affairs are in order. The people that I know, you know, try to have them think about their affairs. Things I don't like thinking about, but that's what we have to do.
Lakeisha Butts is an end-of-life doula in Durham. She spoke with our producer, Rebecca Martinez. Coming up, death over dinner. More in a moment.
There are things we're taught not to discuss in polite company, but by avoiding so-called impolite conversations, we're missing out on the chance to make important connections with each other. I'm Anita Rao, and I'm on a personal journey to uncover just what happens when we open ourselves up to talking about taboo topics that affect our bodies and our brains. Find out on Embodied, a new podcast about sex, relationships, and your health from North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC.
When we, the living, think about, quote, getting our affairs in order, funeral arrangements play a big part of that. Do we want to be buried or cremated? If there's a funeral, what should it include? While death is inevitable, regardless of a pandemic, COVID has changed how the funeral industry helps people memorialize and celebrate the lives of the deceased.
In the beginning, it was, well, should we hold the service or not? Or let's just delay it for a couple months, because I thought that this would be gone by, you know, the end of the summer. And so a lot of people were delaying services.
Heather Hill is the funeral director at Renaissance Funeral Home and Crematory in Raleigh. She says that COVID deaths have accounted for about 24 memorial services at the funeral home. But no matter the cause of death, Hill says the pandemic has required families to adapt to new methods of grieving.
Now that this has become more embedded in our lives, families are considering that when they're coming in, that they probably won't be able to have a traditional service like they had before the pandemic. We are still urging families to honor and celebrate their loved one. We're just giving them ideas on how to change that. We are still offering services with very small amounts of people here. Mostly it's immediate family that have already been quarantining together. If there is some family members that haven't been around them that are coming, we have a very large chapel, so we're able to social distance and wear masks. And we're doing a lot more streaming. So almost every family that we've served in the past, you know, 5 months have also streamed a service as well. But we're urging families to do something. If they are delaying services, have something with their immediate family. Make your loved one's favorite meal. Do something in order to deal with the grief that you're having right now. What I have not found is that people have changed their wishes because of this. If they were doing burial, they're still doing burial. They're just doing graveside service outside. If they've chosen cremation, they're staying with cremation. Just how we memorialize and celebrate them is changing. I haven't found people to choose a different mode of disposition. They're just changing how they celebrate.
Do you anticipate any changes in the coming months, 2 to 3 months out?
I had an experience with more than one family where it's actually been beneficial to have the decrease in numbers and not to have so much surrounding a death. We had a gentleman in our community died who was very, very well known. And his initial plans were to have a lot of people at his bedside and to have these big services and this big celebration that will eventually happen. His wife has decided that way after the pandemic, when it's safe, we are going to celebrate him like he wanted. But because of the pandemic, those people were not able to be around at her side. It made the process more intimate for her. It was just her and her sons at his bedside, and she was thankful for that. A lot of times when people die, we feel such a commitment to our community to get out there and greet. You've been to services where there's, you know, lines of hundreds of people waiting to speak to the family, and that is very healing, but it can also be very stressful. So in this case, I think sometimes the families are grieving differently because there's more intimacy in a COVID-19 environment where we are able to bring those that are already close to us even closer.
Heather, you run something called a death cafe to increase awareness about death. Can you tell me about that? Tell me if the pandemic has had any impact on it.
It is, absolutely. We started Death Cafe because we wanted to increase the conversations around death. Of course, it's a taboo subject. Nobody wants to talk about their funeral plans over Thanksgiving dinner, unless you live at my house, where I hand out information sheets to my family. But I think it hurts us when we don't have these conversations. Not so much about, you know, the dry details, this is where I'm going to be buried, this is what I want on my tombstone type of thing. The important things, like at the end of life, I want to die at home. I want to die under hospice. I don't want to die, you know, hooked up to machines. You know, these are really important conversations. And the taboo surrounding them is because we don't talk about it. So we're trying to normalize the conversations surrounding death and dying and make the discussions not so taboo.
Heather Hill is the funeral director at Renaissance Funeral Home and Crematory in Raleigh. She also runs a death cafe in the city. That's it for this episode of Tested. I'm Dave DeWitt. Our producers are Rebecca Martinez and Charlie Shelton Ormond. Lindsay Foster Thomas is the executive producer. Thanks for listening.